welcome to the first episode of The Underdogs of Animal Welfare. This podcast will bring you behind the scenes look at one of the largest animal shelters in the entire country. It won't be based solely off of this animal shelter, but really, you know, just the day of the life of a worker of in animal welfare. We'll have some interviews with staff here and with leaders from other shelters and other organizations. And it'll be, you know, really from the employee's point of view. We'll also go over some current events in animal welfare as these episodes progress. So really, all things animal welfare is what you can expect. And today, we have an interview lined up with Luis Quintanilla. Luis is the shelter manager for Palm Valley Animal Center in Edinburgh, Texas. And we're going to talk a little bit to him for the next hour. So, Luis, how are you?
Good. Happy to be here.
Are you? Good. I'm glad. So Luis, tell me, if we could just get started, man. Like, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you said, I'm the shelter manager here at Palm Valley Animal Center. And I've been working here for a year and 5 months, almost 6 months. And I started on March 17th, 2018. I started here as a temp. I was only supposed to be here for a week, and then a year and a half later, I ended up shelter manager. So it's been a really great but exhausting year.
So it's interesting, man. I told you to tell me a little bit about yourself, and you went right into the job.
That's my life. That's my everything. Everything in my life is Palm Valley now. So it's taken over everything in the best way possible.
And I think that is a common theme in animal welfare. I mean, you know, doing something like this, it really does consume you. So, I guess let's start with how you got started in animal welfare.
A year ago, I probably didn't even know that those two words were ever put together, animal welfare. If I had ever heard that term, I would have thought it's just something some liberal arts major like myself just made up. But in November of 2017, my grandpa adopted a little blue heeler from our sister facility, our adoption center, the Laurie P. Andrews Paws Center. And when I was there, I just met him. I was down the road, so I ended up meeting him there just to take a look around and see that dog that he was going to bring home. And it really got to me walking through those kennels and seeing them all just waiting for homes. And that's because that center is much nicer than you know, Palm Valley is. And at least it's nicer in appearance. And it really got to me seeing all those dogs there. It just, you know, it was just weighing on me. So I asked if I could volunteer, how to go about it. They told me to sign up online. So I did. And that following week, I came to an orientation here at Palm Valley. And that's when it started. But I was a terrible volunteer because that was only one of two times that I actually came to the facility.
Yeah. So that's funny. So, the first thing that you saw, or the first location you saw, was the Paul Center.
Yeah.
And so, walking through those kennels, you said that did something to you. When was the first time you saw Palm Valley Animal Center?
It was probably a week later, but even at that point, I had only seen the front building, which was even, you know, it was definitely a drastic change of scenery from Paws, but still nothing compared to the back of PVAC, where I ended up making my whole career and meeting all my friends. So that, you know, it was just a drastic change of scenery. An old building, kennels looked like they were falling apart, everything looked really crowded, everything was dark. And
so,
yeah.
I'm glad you hit on the drastic change between those locations. We can talk more about that. I think first, you know, explain to me your first day at Palm Valley, your first day working.
First day working. It was quite a few months after that. It was in March of 2018, and I was going to be doing data entry. All the animal control officers would bring us, you know, cards of the animals that they picked up. Each animal had a card, and I was going to be putting all of that on our database. And so, first time I start here, I get sent to the back for the first time ever, and we were sharing one computer. It was four people, three people being trained, one person doing the training, all sharing one computer that was super slow. Internet connection was just terrible. And we were surrounded by cats. There must have been 150 cats in this one room that we were in. And this room is more of a hallway than a room. And so we had the four of us crowded around one computer, and we had another two employees in that room performing their daily animal care tasks. And then on top of that, we had the medical staff coming in and out all day doing their medical treatments and vaccinations and all that assessment upon intake that cats receive in this tiny closet that had no AC. So it was a really busy room, a busy and chaotic environment to learn all that in.
So it's funny that, that's how your first day was, because my first day at Palm Valley a year ago in July was similar. I mean, at least from what you've seen or what you've displayed, the first rooms that I saw at Palm Valley when taking my first tour of the facility were those cat rooms, which like you mentioned, they're tiny, tiny rooms, really hallway sized, but tons and tons of cats stacked floor to ceiling. I mean, Palm Valley gets in, at that time, it's like 40,000 animals, a little over 30,000 of those being dogs and cats. So if we just split that down the middle, 15,000 cats, pass through just those three rooms. So I can only imagine, I had an animal welfare background before I came here. You didn't. So when you saw those rooms and when just talk to me more about that first experience. Like what was going through your mind? What were the thoughts going through your head?
The smell was overwhelming. It was unbelievable to smell that for the first time, 150 cats in one room with really terrible airflow. I didn't think cats could smell that bad. I didn't think anything could smell that bad. And, no matter how well the animal care workers were doing their job, by the time you finish cleaning one bank of kennels and move on to the next, you have to start again. It's just a constant upkeep. And all the while, more and more cats are arriving. So it seemed like it was endless. I'd never seen so many animals in my life. Not cats and dogs anyway. So it was just, I'll never forget the smell and the chaos. And that first day as we were being trained, the person training us got scratched in the face by a cat that ended up getting loose, and it was hot. But one thing that did stand out was how everybody was super nice. Everybody seemed like they were having a good time, even though it was a really difficult job. And I was instantly attracted to that.
It's a special thing here, and I'm sure there's many other shelters like this, but yeah, I mean, I noticed that right away as well. For the amount of animals that these employees had to deal with on a daily basis, to care for, and it was never ending. Just during my first day, my first tour, it was just a never-ending line of animal control officers dropping off animals. At that point, it was well over 100 animals a day were coming in. But if you just looked at the employees individually, you would never know that that was their every day. Just completely, they were just really, really nice people, and ready to take on the challenge of that day. So I was super excited when I saw that as well.
It's weird that all of that was happening in the middle of Edinburgh, and I never even knew that it existed. I lived with my mom at the time, and it was 2 minutes away, and I had no idea that this operation was as large as it is. I had no idea that there was, 100 employees working hard to save all these, thousands and thousands of cats and dogs every single day a few blocks away. I had no idea. My glimpse of animal shelters in the valley was just paws, that adoption floor, nice and bright and colorful, And then the front building, you know, drab, but still, you know, not nearly as busy as I learned later that the shelter was.
So you told me a little bit about your first day and how you got started, but you know, I think we have to go a little bit deeper than that. So you told me a story one time about, you know, your life prior to Palm Valley, and you were, I guess, training or doing some training to become, what was it, a police officer?
Yeah, I was doing training for first it was Border Patrol and then it was state troopers and yeah, so I was my and I was eventually going to take the civil service test for McAllen PD, you know. I think it was going to be sometime in April or May. I think it was April of 2018. And that was what I was going to do because I graduated from law school in 2014 and I hated it. I couldn't stand law school. I had friends there that were that I, you know, I'm still friends with, but it was just not my passion. It wasn't my calling, but I was just doing it because I thought, well, this is something to do. And I had a liberal arts degree when I graduated from undergrad, and I thought, well, I don't want to be a teacher because my mom's a teacher and I know how stressful it is, so I don't want to do that. And let me,
Stressful.
yeah, I know, right? I'm stressful, but you know, in my mind, not rewarding. My mom loves it, so it's good for her, you know.
No. I mean,
But
being a teacher is super stressful. I don't want to downplay that. I
yeah.
just feel like if you didn't want to do that because of stress,
Yeah. Stress
how do
and
you
no
feel
love
about your
for
decision now?
it. Yeah, well, it's different because I actually care about these animals. Other people's kids is different. You know, I don't know. It's just totally different. But yeah, when you know, when I graduated, it was in May of 2014 that I moved back from Indiana when I was going to law school, and I took and failed the bar several times, and I think that was just 100% lack of motivation. I didn't care. I didn't really want it, so I wasn't really going after it, and I was just floating. I was in limbo for several years of just floating around, not really sure of what to do, but I had a mountain of student loan debt, and you know, it was basically a mortgage without a house to show for it, and in a field that I had no interest in. So I thought, well, what else do I want to do that's even remotely related to this? Well, I thought, well, I could be maybe a police officer or something in law enforcement and use my criminal law background knowledge to make me, you know, a better police officer maybe. And at least when it comes to that side of it. But yeah, it wasn't for me.
You told me a story about, you know, when you were training, you were at the gym, which is across the street from the facility,
Yeah.
from Palm Valley, and you were on the treadmill, and you were just looking out the window, and you could see Palm Valley.
Yeah, and I just thought, I'll never work there, right? That's just like a that's like a drab, faded peach colored building. And I remember I had gone in there the one time for my orientation, and I thought, oh, the smell is overwhelming, even in the front building. I thought, I'll never work in a place like this. I don't know how these people can do it. And I came back one more time to learn how to do laundry, and I did maybe half a machine's worth of folding, and then I left. And
You
yeah.
said something that I wanna, you know, hit on. I don't know how these people do it. That's
Yeah.
something that I hear a lot. And I'd like to hear your answer to that now. You questioned that in the beginning, but I want to hear your answer. Why do you do it?
I don't know. I love it. And it's hard to explain exactly why. It's like when you meet somebody you really care about, you know that you do, but you know, and I one of my favorite things to do is to write, and I love being able to express myself and my ideas, but that's one thing it's difficult to explain just exactly how or why this called me. But I think one of the reasons why I love this place so much, and you know, everyone has their own reasons. All of us here have similar stories, even though we may have come from different places or may have thought our lives are going to end up in totally different ways than they did. I think all of us floated around before we started working at PVAC. And you know, as corny as it sounds, it's just like all of us were sort of wandering around the streets like the animals that we take in. We didn't really have a place. It wasn't that we weren't meant to do something great. It's just that we hadn't found it yet. And so I've always been attracted to action, to fast-paced, you know, environments. I've always really liked it when things were going wrong and I could do something about it, or at least try. And so animal welfare was the perfect place for me, at least in, you know, PVAC, in that current, in the state that it was when I first started here, where everything was just day to day. You know, there wasn't really that much order. There weren't really any rules. It was sort of make it up as you go to save as many animals as you possibly can. So that chaotic environment was exactly what I needed. And that's why I never left.
Well, that's amazing. And I love that fact. I love the way you said that, you know, like the animals that we care for, you know, many of us were just wandering around, you know, looking for our home, so to speak. And I do see that that's the way a lot of people get into this field, and I'm one of them. You know, I managed different businesses. I worked at pet stores. I ran doggy daycares, and all of it was, you know, I enjoyed it. But when I came into animal welfare, you know, I will never look for another job. I mean, I love where I'm at. I love animal welfare, and it is. I mean, it gives you, it's just so rewarding, you know, when done appropriately. I just don't know how I would get that feeling from another career path. So that's definitely why, how I do it and why I stay. I think this is the best job ever. I know there's ups and there's plenty of downs, but yeah, you know, I feel like us in animal welfare, we're making a difference. You know, we are truly changing the world, and I love it.
It's hard to explain to other people what it is that we do, let alone why. It's hard to explain that we even do this. You know, I've written about it before, and I've talked about it. You know, when people ask, you know, that are in my family, when people ask that, you know, old classmates, oh, what are you doing? And then they, you know, I tell them, yeah, I work at the animal shelter, and immediately, you know, they just dismiss that as they know what an animal shelter is in their mind. It's just a pound. They kind of know what goes on there vaguely. And that's it. They don't have any idea. They have no conception of any sort of national movement. They have no idea what no kill is. You know, they have no idea what anything is that we take for granted as part of our worldview and everything that we live for. Most people just, I feel like, just don't know. At least in my previous life, they just have no idea. So half the time I just sort of, I don't even get into it. They ask me, so you still work at the pound? You know, or are you still there with the animal? Yeah, yeah, you know. And their idea of me working is walking dogs and playing with cats. And there's so much beyond that that it's hard to even get them plugged in. It's hard. That's why I think another reason why we get so close to our coworkers is because it's so difficult to explain to outsiders that, you know, this is what we're doing.
Well, this is, I mean, that's exactly why I wanted to create this podcast. I feel like you've done such an amazing job with your writing on the blog at Palm Valley.
Thank you.
That, you know, I feel like that is a format that will reach more people than, you know, maybe just word of mouth. And I think that this is another format that we can kind of get that story out there. This is much more than just playing with puppies and kittens. Although we do get to do that sometimes, it definitely is much more than that. And again, I mean, this is changing the world for animals, changing the world for people. So again, I'm like you. I have a hard time explaining this job to, or my career to people that aren't aware of our situation. So I think this podcast will be another way that we could do that. So, all right. So now that we've answered what made you stay, what advice would you have for those that maybe are still wandering, that truly love animals and they've thought about the possibility of working in an animal shelter, but they're not sure. What advice would you give them?
Do it. Just immediately go and apply for the first job you can get, scrubbing kennels. And if you don't love that, you're not going to love anything else about the job, probably. So that's the testing ground. And worst case scenario, you have, you know, yeah, I would say give it at least a couple of weeks. So worst case scenario, you've gotten a couple of weeks of really low pay. And then you can keep on wandering after that. So best case scenario, you found your calling. So I think you should just go and do it. Go fold laundry, go and commit to scrubbing kennels and, you know, changing out litter trays. So that's it.
I mean, I think, you know, along with those things, what if this person, you know, is sensitive or emotional? How do you think, you know, what's some advice you'd give to them coming into a field that is so, you know, at times emotionally driven?
I don't know if any of my advice on that would be healthy, but I barely took a vacation the last couple of days after a year and a half. I don't know. I think for me, I think you just need to try to find a balance. So I was lucky. I have all my friends here that work here that I could lean on and we could talk to. We could go to the nearest bar right after work after a 16-hour day of just one setback after another. But we'd get back and put our boots on the next day and keep going. I don't know. I think you need a support system. I was lucky. I have my parents that are always very supportive of whatever I was doing, you know. So that, I think you need to find a support system. But, and that's really important. So I'm really emotional. I take things very personally, and I think I'm pretty sensitive to things, and I think I can be quick to react. So it's hard. There were many times where I left here, even after a good day, and I had to just pull over at the nearest gas station because I just couldn't hold it in anymore. And I just had to sit there and kind of let it all out until I could drive again. It's a really emotional job, especially when you're talking about the high volume of animals that we've got. So, you know, we averaged probably, I think I did the math once, it was like 107 animals every single day that arrived at Palm Valley, you know, in 2018. And around this time last year, we're only saving maybe 33%. So that averages about 70 animals every single day that are being carted off to the back and not making it out alive. They're not ending up in a forever home. They're not ending up at a sanctuary. They're not ending up safe. You know,
I do want to talk about that. So I think this is the perfect time to get into this first year. So it's been a year since we met.
Mm-hmm.
I started here in July of last year, and I want you to be as honest as possible.
Mm-hmm.
What were your first thoughts when you heard that not only that I was coming, and how did you hear that? You know,
yeah.
did you hear about that prior to me arriving, and and then best friends too? Let's talk about that as well.
The first time I ever heard that you and best friends were gonna be coming down, it was from my then coworker. There's three of us in rescue. It was me, Selena, and Yessie. And, you know, they taught me everything about this shelter, and I'll always owe a debt to them. And when we first heard that, you know, we were going to get some help, you know, and it was put that way, oh, we're going to get some help, I just rolled my eyes and I thought, who the hell is going to tell us anything about ourselves that we don't already know? It's a sad situation. We have no money. We don't have enough staff. We have too many animals. We don't have enough space. What are they going to tell us? Who do they think they are? And I said, also, who the hell are they? What is best friends? What does that even mean? You know, I had never heard of this. And I didn't know that there were organizations that were on a national level. I didn't know animal welfare was an industry. I thought there was just disconnected islands all over the country that were all doing a bunch of sad work that they had to do because it was their passion. And even if they could only save 30 out of the 100 every day, you know, they got to keep pushing for those 30. So I had no idea that there was any sort of connectivity. And when I first, you know, I didn't do any research on best friends for a long time, but I just remember being there in the old rescue office in the very back of our shelter, and being exhausted. I was, you know, all of us were sweaty up to our knees because we were always wearing rubber boots. We were just completely drenched because we had plastic gowns back then. We were always just so tired, constantly just exhausted. And when I first heard, oh, best friends is sending somebody down, and I just thought, I remember telling Selena yesterday, I'm like, I don't know who these people are, but like, if they mess with our shelter, if they mess with us, I don't know who they are, but if they in any way hinder our efforts, I'm gonna hurt them.
Oh man.
And
All
yeah,
right.
I mean, it was, I
It's
guess,
passion, right?
I
I
mean,
get it.
you know, like, I law school background.
Resource guarding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just that shelter environment. I've just been in the kennel too long. And yeah, so I just thought, you know, I went to law school. I don't give a damn what anybody tells me. Like, if worse comes to worse and I just don't like these people and they don't treat my friends well, you know, it's a storytelling competition. That's what PR is. It's just like a lawsuit, right? It's a storytelling competition, and I'm gonna tell one hell of a story if they mess with us.
Holy moly. Okay. All right. So I guess you heard about it. You didn't do too much research on best friends. Then, when we got here.
Yeah, well, I remember seeing you drive up, and I thought, "Who's this kid? Like, he looks like he's my age, which I'm not a kid, but my experience with, you know, director of operation or, you know, executive directors, you know, any sort of higher leadership, I'm like, oh, they're old. They're old men who have never held a dog in their life except for the photo op." And I just thought, like, what is this guy doing? Like, what, you know? So that threw me off. I was expecting an older guy. And, you know, when I still didn't trust anybody. I didn't trust anybody. It was the whole world was just the three of us, me, Selena, and Yessi. We were so disconnected back then, even within PVAC, that, you know, everyone was, it seems like we're all pulling the same cart in different directions instead of working with each other the most efficient way possible. So, yeah, I remember the three of us were just in this bunker mentality of like everything on the outside is potentially a threat to our work. And, you know, we were doing a lot of good work. You know, that team, I'll always be so proud of that, of being a part of that team. You know, last year we ended up rescuing out, you know, 8,500 animals. So it was really, really good work. But, you know, when you're that close together all the time, it seems like everything that comes up is some sort of challenge. I just assumed that this was going to be another challenge. You know, we're going to have some new leadership, and there's going to probably be some ridiculous policies, and they're going to try to apply utopian ideals to our reality, and it's not going to work out. And then we're going to somehow be blamed for it, you know, and you know. We're going to be held accountable for their mistakes and their failed policies. I was just thinking all these things, right? And I remember we were in the back, and for some reason, Selena mentioned Mike. Oh, you know, Mike's up in the front. You know, and I said, "What is he doing?" Like, just, you know, he's doing what leaders do, probably, right? Just sitting at a desk, and then this was like in July, and then she said, "No, he's working with this dog that's kind of caution, you know, she gets a little snappy." And I'll never forget, it was like a little brown, like, valley dog, like,
Texas Brown Dog.
yeah, generations ago had some beagle in her or some Jack Russell in her, some
Her
sort
name
of
was
weird mix.
Sheila.
Sheila, you remember?
Yeah.
And so she said, "Oh, he's working with her, you know, he's up in the front night." And I was like, "Yeah, whatever. Like, there's what? Which news station is here taking the picture?" And that's what he will have done. Like, he's basically like people who go to spring break in a really poor developing country, and then they dig one ditch or something, and they take a picture with the shovel for Facebook, and they're like, "Oh, check it out, we're here helping the poor people." Like, I figured that's what it was gonna be like. And then when I actually saw you, I'm like, "Wait a minute, there's no cameras here. Like, you don't look like made up or anything. Like, you're in a
Made
team."
up.
Like, I thought, okay, maybe he's not, you know, the new emperor. Maybe he's just, you know, not a bad person. I still didn't say, like, maybe he's not a good person, but I thought maybe he's not a bad person. I don't know. And I still had no idea what Best Friends was. I just thought, oh, whatever, it's just another company. So it was a very slow, like, I just imagined Best Friends as one of our kennel staff, and I was that caution dog in the back of the kennel, showing my teeth, exhausted of being on the defensive, but still not trusting enough. And then Best Friends just kept on slowly putting out their hand. You know, like,
you were my Sheila.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then slowly coming out with a treat, and I'm just lowering my guard, and then, you know, I feel like that's the way it was until, and it wasn't a very slow process, because that was July when you guys got here, and then by the end of August, you know, maybe the end of September, I already knew. Yeah, everything, my whole worldview had changed, because with just in those first few months, 15% increase.
Yep.
You know, in life saving. So that's a lot less animals that I have to carry to the back. A lot less animals that our staff has to cart to the back, and, you know, it means a lot.
Well, you know, I remember the first time that I met you specifically. It was the first time I brought my fiance around to show her PVAC, and, you know, we went through the drop-off kennels, the kennels where Animal Control first dropped off all of the dogs, and we saw this dog that was, I mean, it didn't even look like a dog. Found out later his name was Buffalo. It was just a pile of hair on the floor, a pile of knotted hair. It was some type of, I don't even know, maybe like a Schnauzer mix. I mean, yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, some kind of terrier mix.
Yeah. Yeah, what breed he was, but couldn't see his face. I knew we had to do something to help that guy out. And before we even got to the midsection of PVAC, you and your team already had him out. Already had him out. Had a volunteer there that you guys wrangled to help shave him down. So that was my first introduction to you. I met you a little bit later than the rest of the rescue team, because you were the driver for rescue, so you were mostly in that van.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about that. You know, we talked about your first day, your first week. Tell me about, you know, the driving. And then we'll get back to, we'll fast forward after that to what you thought about Best Friends and myself a little bit later. But let's talk about that section. When I first met you and you were driving, tell me about that.
I was always tired and angry and somehow energized at the same time and fulfilled. It was just animal welfare, just in one single day, sometimes even within the same half hour, you're going to feel every emotion possible to a human being in the most extreme way. So one minute you're crying because you're just so happy that this one dog, you know, that you really, really got attached to made it out. And then, you know, other times you're just crying because it seems like it's never going to end, and you're just like emptying out the world, you know, world's oceans with a thimble, and you just can't do it fast enough. And, you know, the whole world is just always constantly closing in on you. You know, you have bills to pay, you have no sleep, you're losing time with family and friends outside of the shelter because you need to keep working. You know, when I was the driver, I don't even know how many hours every single week we would clock out and then keep working, because we just needed to keep going. So it was the best and worst time of my life was when I was that driver for that team. So about 6,000 or so of those 8,500 were loaded onto my van, you know, by the three of us, and taken up to San Antonio or Dallas or all these other places. And so it was just really hard. I don't know how many times I was dangerously tired on the road. It was exhausting. We'd get here sometimes at 5 in the morning, to load up, and you know, I would leave maybe by 8, but by 8 o'clock I'm already completely physically exhausted and dehydrated and almost completely spent, and then I have another 8 hours ahead of me minimum just of driving to and from San Antonio, not to mention the couple of hours in San Antonio where I'm unloading all the animals, and then coming back to unload all of those kennels, scrub them all, scrub the van, get it ready for the next day, every single day. So it was just incredibly exhausting. I remember driving and I used to just start punching my leg because I couldn't stay awake, and it was really hard. It was constantly hard. Like, no one, I don't think most people knew just how difficult that job was. Because, okay, everyone knows medical is incredibly difficult, and it is, you know, especially emotionally, because they have to euthanize. It's just really tough. And then our kennel techs, no one can argue with the fact that they throw all of themselves into those kennels when it's 110 degrees, you know. But I feel like people, even on property, would ask, oh, driving is pretty easy, right? It's like, you know, like it's delivering pizzas, and it's just not, you know.
And again, this is your time. So I think it's great for everybody to know these things, because driving is similar to, you know, you got that from the inside, right?
Yeah.
People inside of animal welfare didn't realize how difficult of a job that is. So if we just zoom out even further, what do you think, you know, somebody in the public thought driving for an animal shelter was?
I imagine they think, oh, it's cute, you load up like 2 or 3 dogs in a nice van that's, you know, brand new, and you know, you take a nice scenic route over to a vet clinic or a shelter, you meet somebody in a parking lot, and hey, guess what, happy ending, and that's it, and you drive back and you collect your pay at the end of the week and everything is good.
So I was gonna get to this a little bit later, but talk to me about collecting your pay at the end of the week.
Oh God. So that's really, I think, our first true introduction.
Yeah.
So I spent on it was the worst transport ever. The absolute worst transport I ever ran. It was a 3-van trip over 120 animals, and I was in the lead van, and you know, everything made total sense in those days, you know, since I wasn't the manager, I had to manage that entire operation and and, you know, plan everything, the logistics of everything, so that made total sense, right? A staff member doing all of this on his own. And so that's what it was. It was incredibly difficult. We got here at 5 in the morning to load up all those animals, and they were scattered around all the shelter. We loaded up all 3 vans, and we were supposed to rendezvous at around noon to unload these animals. We didn't rendezvous with these people until around 7:30 in the evening. We didn't finish unloading the animals until 9:30 at night, and we were in Round Rock, just north of Austin, about an hour north of Austin, more or less. And I remember being there in this IKEA parking lot, completely exhausted. I had been on the clock since like 5 in the morning. It was already 9:30 at night. Hadn't eaten all day. Had barely had any water. Unloaded everybody safely. But it was incredibly, incredibly draining. We ate dinner really quickly and took off home. And skipping more of the more disgusting details on the way home, just the smell and the flies. Oh my God. I slept on the side of the highway in the van, and I couldn't even recline my seat because our van was so full of kennels that you couldn't recline the seat. So I was sitting upright in my rubber boots, and I ended up taking them off because it was just so disgusting and it was so hot. And then tried sleeping for about an hour, maybe 45 minutes, and then took another stretch. You know, this was in Alice, Texas, on the side of the highway. I slept in this rest area. And then try to make it back to the valley, and this was already like 3 in the morning. Ended up giving up and sleeping in the parking lot of a gas station in Premont, Texas, and I remember crying out of anger and exhaustion that I couldn't believe that I was having to do this. I'm so tired. All I want to do is go home. I'm so tired. And but I thought, okay, it's fine. At least what can I truly complain about? At least I'm getting paid for all of this suffering, all of this misery. I'm actually getting paid to save animals, right? How bad can it be? And next day was going to be payday, so we're all set. And then I get my paycheck, and that day alone, I had been on the clock for like 25, 26 hours, you know? And the day before, I got here at 5 in the morning. I didn't get back until 7:45 in the morning the following day. In the van the entire time, but 100 animals safe. So I didn't get my pay. I got a check for only 38 hours, and wasn't much to begin with, but I thought, well, at least I'll get some overtime. And then so I immediately told my then manager, and it was supposed to be addressed by the following week. I thought, fine, it's fine, it's no big deal, like at least I'll get it on the next pay period. Didn't come in again. And next week, document it. I type it up, I give it to my manager again, send it over to accounting. Another week of over 19 hours of overtime, not getting paid. The third week, I was getting angry. And the reason, it sounds crazy to let it go that long, but when you work here, that just happens. There's always a crisis, there's always an emergency, there's always a dog that needs you, there's always a cat that needs you, there's always something. So you can put yourself off, for quite a while and not take care of yourself. And finally, it was going to be the third pay period, and it didn't happen again. I didn't get paid again, that overtime. And so that's when I got to my computer and I was furious. I wanted to quit. I wanted to do something. And I wrote up the account of that miserable day where I was in charge of doing everything. And for some reason, all this responsibility fell on me that day for that transport, but I still hadn't been compensated. So I emailed that to you, and I was ready to go. I was ready to go nuclear. I was gonna go to the news. I was gonna go do something. I was gonna call my uncle's firm, his law firm, and say, "Hey, I need you to hurt these people because they're not paying me." And so I had my media package ready,
Oh my goodness.
and I, you know, but you fixed it the very next day. And I remember you writing back saying, not to minimize your ordeal, but that was really well written.
Yeah, I remember opening that email, and it was early in the morning, and I was reading it from my bedroom, and I kind of got lost in what the request was or what the issue was, because your writing was just so amazing. I felt like I was with you on those transports. So among all these other things, these good qualities that you have, writing is something that, I'm so happy that you not only want to do, but that you're willing to do that for Palm Valley, as far as our blog's concerned.
That's
But
my favorite thing to do.
that's amazing. You could tell. I mean, the way you write, I mean, it's insane. So, we definitely weren't doing the blog at that point. We were putting out a bunch of other fires at that point. But the next, so yeah, we handled that issue thankfully, and that hasn't happened again. So the next thing that you wrote that I saw was the letter that you and the rescue team wrote to me. Can you just tell a little bit about that letter? When you're talking about it, just talk about the letter in general, what was written in that letter, and really the source.
Sure. Yeah, I remember, it was a regular day here at PVAC, and I was, up and down property all day, and as was Jesse and Selena. And I remember being called into your office, and you were you were sitting there and you had us, take a seat, and as paranoid as we always were, we always thought, oh God, what is this? And then you invited us to dinner because you were gonna host Holly Sizemore, Judah Batista, and Julie Castle over at Draft House nearby, just for dinner and drinks. And I thought, this is so weird that we're getting invited to dinner. What is this? We can show our faces in public. What is this? We're not going to be hidden in the back, And so I just thought, okay, well, that'll be interesting. But I figured, it was going to be very formal and very rigid and whatever, because I had no idea what these people were all about still. I knew that we're saving more lives because of their organization, but I really didn't know what they were like as people. And so we ended up going, and we're sitting there right next to them, right across the table from them, and they're asking us questions, or we're telling our stories, and I could see the look in their eye, and they're not fighting every urge to look at the clock or their phone. And it's what I would completely imagine from leaders of an organization that large. And they were so present, and they were so compassionate, and I couldn't believe that they were that interested in our life. So after being able to experience that, and people that have been there before and gone out through the other side, it meant a lot. So that night I went home to my room at my mom's house and pulled out my laptop, and I decided to write that letter, just thank you, to show my appreciation for letting us tell our story and putting us out there, and letting us tell a story instead of you just telling it for us. It just meant a lot. So I wrote it that night. The next morning I caught Jesse and Selena in the conference room here, and I told them about it, and they just instantly rolled their eyes, as they do every time I see them for the first time in the morning.
And, so it had nothing to do with the letter. They just roll their eyes when they see you.
Every time I walk in, they're already thinking, oh, what now? And so I told them that I wrote this thank you letter, and I said I would really like for them to sign off on it if they like it, if they approve of it. And so I read it to them, and they both agreed that, oh yeah, this is nice, I like it, it's good. And we just thought nothing of it. It was just a thank you, because that's what you do when someone does something nice for you. You say thank you. And so that's what it was. And then we signed it and then handed it over to you. So that was that. I had no idea that it was ever going to go beyond it. Oh, thanks, man.
Well, I could tell you that, that letter meant so much to me, means so much to me. I have it posted in the room that I get ready for work every day, and I refer back to it all the time, and I felt that it was so important that, I don't keep that letter to myself. I feel like the sentiments that were in that letter, they reach out far and wide, and I feel like your feelings that you poured into that letter are the same that I feel like a lot of people in animal welfare probably share those same ideas and sentiments. So to know that the changes that we were making were affecting not only the animals, because we can track that, there's data for that, we know that we're saving more lives, but to know that the people are being affected in a positive way as well meant everything to me, and it means everything to me, and it's the basis of what I feel I bring to leadership is really figuring out the culture of things and making sure that we're saving animal lives but also people lives as well. So getting that letter is, and reading that letter and pieces of that letter every morning are just, it keeps it in my mind that although we're saving animals, we cannot forget about the people that are involved as well.
I guess that was your passing grade finally. So when you asked about how we first felt, or how I specifically felt when you and Best Friends first got here, I was just very like, all right, we'll see. We'll see. And sooner or later, the veil will be lifted, and I will have been right the whole time that these people don't know what they're talking about, or that they don't mean it, right? Who can be that sincere? And so after, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months of that, slowly approaching, you know, the kennel door and slowly establishing that trust, I realized, okay, all right, these guys are all right. You know, they're helping us save thousands of lives, and they're not tourists. They're not here just for the pictures. They're on the ground. They're with us, and they're letting us tell our story. They're not just telling the story just for the sake of self-promotion. They're just like, look at these people, hear their stories. It's incredible. Instead of just taking all of that for themselves, it's really remarkable that we were heard, and it was really rewarding. We you know, still broke, still exhausted, still sweaty, but happy because we're saving animals and people know it.
That's awesome. Saving a lot of animals.
Yeah.
Over 6,000 year over year, more animals were saved, you know, due to this partnership and to this team that we've created here. It's amazing. I mean, when we started off in July, like you were mentioning, 33% save rate. Now today we're at a 67% save rate in one of our busiest months.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think how far we've come so quickly. And it gives me chills thinking about how far we're going to be next year.
Yeah.
And we're going to detail it through this podcast and through your writing. We're gonna let the world know what we're doing down here through these formats. But also, we want to make sure that, you know, we're tapping into animal welfare workers far and wide. So as this podcast continues, we'd like your feedback. If there's something, there's points that you'd like us to check. If there's things that you want us to go over, we definitely want to hear about it. So please let us know. And as always, if you're not in animal welfare and you're just listening to this for the first time, please look into your local animal shelter. And there's tons of ways you can help, whether it's volunteering, fostering, donating, just sharing posts on social media. All of those things help so greatly. And you can be a part of this as well. You're welcome to be a part of this. We need you to be a part of this. And that's really, you know, what we're creating this for, to get more people involved and to really understand our story and what it's like in, you know, the day-to-day life of those who work or who have chosen this career path. So thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast and you want to hear more of these, please do not hesitate to donate to pvactx.org. The donation link's there. Or if you'd like to make a donation to Best Friends or both, it's bestfriends.org. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to the next episode, and I hope you do too.